Welcome to 180 Degrees, brought to you by the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland and supported by the Government of Ireland. Our mission is to be at the heart of Ireland's energy revolution. Hello, I'm your host Louise Ryan, and today I'm introducing a very special episode of 180 Degrees, featuring two of my SEAI colleagues. Jim Shear, Head of Data and Insights, will be chatting to Dennis Dineen, Senior Statistician, about our latest Energy in Ireland report. I really hope you enjoy the episode.
Hello everyone, my name is Jim Shear and I'm Head of Data and Insights at the Sustainable Energy Authority of Ireland, and I'm joined today by one of our Senior Statisticians, Dr. Dennis Dineen, and we're going to be talking about the latest energy data for 2020 and 2021, looking at the trends and our targets and how we're getting on and having a brief look to the future. So Dennis, you're very welcome. It's great to be talking to you again. And maybe you could start by just sharing a little bit about what it is you do and what we do at SEAI when it comes to energy statistics.
Yeah, absolutely, Jim. Yeah, so my name is Dennis Dineen and I work in the statistics team in SEAI. I think probably SEAI is maybe best known for delivering sort of practical supports to people, for instance, maybe to insulate their homes or business supports or grant for electric cars. That's a really big part of what we do. But another part of what we do is, as the National Energy Authority, SEAI has a lead role in providing expert information and advice to government and also to the public and to business. And as part of this role, the SEAI Statistics Unit is responsible for producing official statistics for energy use in Ireland. So, for example, there would be legal requirements in Ireland to provide statistics on our national energy use to the EU and other international bodies like the IEA. And so part of our role would be to fulfill these requirements. Obviously, energy is a big source of greenhouse gas emissions. So the statistics we produce on energy use then are used to calculate a big part of the greenhouse gas emissions inventory that the EPA is required to report on for Ireland. And then we also publish a good many of public-facing reports each year. They're all written for a general audience. Our main report of the year is the Energy in Ireland report, which we just published this week on the 15th of December. And this is kind of our main report that gives a really good overview of all the latest data on energy trends and energy use in Ireland.
Great. Thanks, Dennis. And of course, the old adage is you can't manage what you don't measure. So a lot of what you're describing there is really creating the scoreboard, if you like. How did we source and use energy in Ireland? In what sectors, what fuels, what emissions came from those fossil fuels? And I think that's very important in terms of the outcomes and the reason, the why we do all of this, right? So, you know, we need to understand where the emissions are coming from so we can come up with solutions and pathways around reducing fossil fuel use. So carbon emissions are really what we're about tackling, and they come from fossil fuels. So reducing our fossil fuels is what we need to do. Why is that important? And could you just highlight then what the science tells us and why we're on this mission that we're on?
Yeah, obviously we're talking an awful lot about greenhouse gas emissions. And like the real reason, you know, just to recap on it, I guess, is that, yeah, greenhouse gas emissions from human activity are really driving global warming, which, if we leave it unchecked and if we do nothing about it, could potentially lead to really disastrous levels of climate disruption that, you know, we really need to avoid at all costs. So, for example, the world today is already 1 degree warmer than it was in pre-industrial times before we started the kind of large-scale use of fossil fuels for our energy use. And we're already seeing the impacts of this 1 degree of change in the many extreme weather events that we see around the globe for the past number of years now. And what the climate science tells us is that we really need to aim to limit global warming as far below 2 degrees as possible. If possible, we need to limit it to about 1.5 degrees. Because once we go above that, above, you know, 2 degrees, we're in danger of reaching these dangerous tipping points where basically we lose control of the climate and it kind of runs away from us. And this is what the global leaders signed up to in the Paris Agreement in 2015, was to try and limit our carbon emissions as close to 1.5 degrees above pre-industrial times as possible. And then the other thing that climate science tells us is that if we want to do that, to limit global warming to 1.5 degrees, we need to reduce global emissions, greenhouse gas emissions, by over 50% by 2030. So that's really a staggering challenge. And that's really what we all signed up to in the Paris Agreement, to make our, you know, very best effort to do that.
Yeah, really, really brings it home when you talk about it as a global challenge like that, and something that really is about the survival of the human race. I think we're pretty clear that the planet will go on, but it's a question of whether it goes on with or without us. And, you know, I think the precautionary principle says we should do everything we can about this. And certainly the science says that if you don't, we're in big trouble, as you've said. And so people will be aware of the COP, as you mentioned, the Conference of the Parties in Paris in 2015, which that agreement was forged, and more recently in Glasgow. And there, I suppose, there's varying levels of confidence in terms of that process and what falls out of it. But I think people might also be aware of the EU's response to that. So the Fit for 55 package people may have heard of, which is the continent-wide EU target for a 55% reduction in emissions by 2030. And of course, that then filters down to member states. So there's an Irish response to that in terms of upgrading our own regulations and our own laws to match up with that EU requirement and to do our bit as a member state. So listeners might be aware of the Citizens Assembly on climate change that happened a few years back, and that led to a Joint Oireachtas Committee report, which led to a climate action plan, which people may be familiar with. And that's all been updated recently. So we've now got some really tough targets enshrined in Irish law for 2030 and 2050. So 2030 to halve our emissions in Ireland and 2050 to get to net zero emissions. So we might talk about what that means in reality. A very detailed climate action plan with assigned responsibilities for different agents across government to deliver loads of actions. The biggest budgets that we've ever had put to the cause, available to householders and businesses in terms of grants and supports for doing up their home, for getting off fossil fuels, for changing to an electric vehicle. And there's lots of communities programs, and that's a lot about what SEAI does. We'll probably talk more about the data than the programs today. And so there's a lot of action going on. There's also carbon budgets every year we need to meet. So in sort of understanding how we can get there, we need to understand a lot about our energy use again and how the carbon emissions come from that and how we can ratchet those down. So we know we need to reduce greenhouse gas emissions. We know that means getting off fossil fuels. Dennis, when it comes to energy, what emissions are we responsible for here in Ireland?
Yeah, so as you say, look, energy is really the most significant contributor to human-caused greenhouse gas emissions globally. So about 80% of all greenhouse gas emissions, say, in the EU would be as a direct result of fossil fuel use for energy use. In Ireland, it's a bit lower. It's about 60%, just under 60%. Of all of our greenhouse gas emissions are from fossil fuels used for energy. And it's a bit lower in Ireland because Ireland has quite a large share of our greenhouse gas emissions come from agriculture. So about a third of all of our greenhouse gas emissions come from agriculture, which is quite large. I think most kind of developed EU countries, that'll be about 10%. And so that poses particular challenges for Ireland. But I guess, you know, it's still the majority of it is from energy use. And that's really what we're going to focus on today.
Yeah, nothing like a challenge, and certainly Ireland has a track record of rising to the challenge globally when it comes to the plastic bag tax or certain other areas where we've done well, a smoking ban, and where we've really led. And I think we believe at SEAI that if you know that we can lead on this and certainly you know do what we can here in Ireland and share our successes and failures internationally and try to help the global community tackle this problem. 2020 was really a landmark year, Dennis. We don't want to skip over it and only talk about 2030 now, because we had targets set for us, came down again from the EU level to the member state level in around 2009. So we had 11 years to think about and plan and take action for the 2020 targets. Let's talk about how we went against some of those targets, because I think it definitely pays to reflect on the successes and failures so that we can learn and not make ourselves wrong, but just look at what's missing and you know add those things in. So how did we go in 2020? How would you sum that up for us?
Yeah, look, as you say, Jim, seems like we've been talking about these 2020 targets for a long time. In some ways, it's almost surreal to think that we've actually been and gone from 2020. We were so long talking about it. And it is really important, I think, that we take stock of how we did against those targets, because we have been working towards them for so long. So look, there was kind of a couple of different targets that we had. There was three kind of main pillars, I guess, to the targets. One was a target around reducing our greenhouse gas emissions. And the next was one around increasing the use of renewable energy. And then there was a third one around increasing our energy efficiency. So I guess if we look first at the reducing greenhouse gas emissions one, which is really kind of, I suppose, the really kind of key main one that you want to achieve, you want to be reducing your greenhouse gas emissions. So at an EU level, the targets for greenhouse gases, they were kind of split into two categories, and each one had its own separate target. So the first category covers large-scale carbon emitters. So these are typical kind of large industrial sites, like maybe steel manufacturing plants or fertilizer manufacturing plants, and also large electricity power stations. So these are, you know, large industrial facilities that use a lot of energy and release a lot of CO2 emissions. But then it also includes other kind of, say, big sectoral emitters like international aviation. So these large emitters are dealt with at EU level under something called the EU Emissions Trading System. So these are not actually really the responsibility of the national governments. These have their own individual targets. So the second category then covers all greenhouse gas emissions not covered by the ETS. And this is known commonly as the non-ETS sector. So it's this non-ETS sector that is the responsibility of the national governments. And Ireland had an EU target to reduce our non-ETS emissions to 20% below 2005 levels by the year 2020. If we look then at what makes up these non-ETS emissions, what did we have to reduce? So roughly speaking, kind of just to simplify, just under half of all our non-ETS emissions were from energy use. And then just under half are from agriculture and then a small bit from other bits. So when we look at the energy side of that, this includes basically everything that's not a large kind of industrial energy user. So that would mostly include households, transport, small businesses, things like that. And then on the agricultural side, it's the methane belched from your livestock and the NOx emissions from fertilizer use and things like that. So, you know, in terms of how do we do against that target then? You know, it was a really important target. So We failed to meet the target. We missed it by quite a margin, actually. So in 2020, we were just 7% below 2005 levels. So if we look at the kind of two halves, energy and agriculture, the energy-related non-ETS emissions in 2020 were 16% below 2005 levels. But that was despite the very significant reduction in transport emissions that we saw in 2020 as a result of COVID. And again, transport's a really big chunk of those non-ETS emissions. So even in spite of that, you know, drastic reduction in transport energy use and emissions, we still only achieved 16% emissions reduction in 2020 compared to 2005. And then on the agriculture side, they were actually 7% above 2005 levels. So, you know, they weren't anywhere near the kind of reductions needed to be seen. So that meant that overall, across both sectors, that our total non-ETS emissions were just down 7%. So yeah, we missed that one by quite a margin.
So I know it can sound actually complicated when you scratch the surface and someone says, well, what targets did you have and did you hit them? And then there's a whole lot of accounting that goes on behind it with our emissions bucket broken down into the ETS emissions trading scheme and non-emissions trading scheme emissions. But on all counts, we didn't hit those targets. So that's I think the takeaway. And you know, so we didn't reduce our use of fossil fuels in energy quickly enough. And it sounds like agricultural emissions went up, which is the wrong direction. So a lot of work to do to turn that ship around. Looking then at the, you know, the two levers we have, you know, to summarize them at a high level to get off fossil fuels is really to use less. So to do that through improving our energy efficiency, and then whatever we're using to start replacing that with renewables. So there are targets for both of those areas too, Dennis, and I guess they feed up into that emissions target. So perhaps we'll start with the renewables. How did we go? And I know that when we look at renewables, we consider three separate targets for heat, for transport, and for electricity. So you can take those in any order you like, and then there's an overall renewables target. So again, the accounting is a little tricky and detailed, but you're a senior statistician, so let's have it.
Yeah, so as you say, Jamie, like one of the main ways we have to reduce our carbon emissions is to, you know, substitute fossil fuel use for zero carbon renewable energy sources. And for that reason, the EU also set a separate target for us to try and increase the amount of renewable energy that we use in our energy system. And so we had two binding EU targets for renewable energy use. One was for an overall share of renewable energy in our energy system. And so that overall share we had to aim for 16% in the year 2020. And then we had a separate target for just looking at renewable energy use in transport. And that target was for 10% of all of the energy we use in transport to be from renewable energy in 2020. So if we look first at the overall target, so again, we failed to meet this. We achieved about 13.5% in 2020, so short of the overall 16%. And really, I'll discuss it in more detail in a second, but the main reason for our poor progress in the overall target was our poor progress in renewable heat. The other target then, the renewable transport one, we actually did achieve that one. So we got just over the 10% target. We were about 10.2% in 2020. So some positive news there. Then if we look at the other targets, as you mentioned, there was these two other targets, renewable electricity target and a renewable heat one. So these were actual they're national targets that we set ourselves. So they weren't binding, but we set them in order to help us to meet the overall target. And really, the renewable electricity target was the one that was kind of formed the backbone of our overall plan to meet the overall target. So we set ourselves a very ambitious target to achieve 40% of all of our electricity from renewable sources in 2020. And we came in just under it, actually, but it was like 39.1%, I think. So, you know, although we didn't meet that target, despite that, it's definitely fair to say that the renewable electricity has been the area where we've been most successful out of all of the modes for developing renewable energy. And renewable energy sources are now the second largest source of electricity after natural gas. So although we just missed the target by a shade, it really has been the most successful area that we've worked on is our renewable electricity target. And then finally, the heat one, which I mentioned just a second ago. So we had set ourselves a target of 12% of all of the energy we use in heat to come from renewable sources, and we fell well short of this. So we only achieved about 6.3% of the energy we used for heat in 2020 was from renewable sources. And that's kind of almost the same level it was since 2014. And that's really the main reason that we failed to reach our overall renewable energy target.
Got that, Dennis. Yeah, and so what I'm really hearing there is that mixed results at that sub-target level, the heat, really falling very, very well short. We'll talk a little bit more about that. The transport doing well on paper in terms of the EU accounting there, and the blend rates of biofuels getting us most of the way there, with electric vehicles making a small contribution with more expected. But then on electricity, the good news story, where we've managed to be one of the world leaders in integrating a variable renewable energy source like wind onto our electricity grid. And that just means that every unit of electricity people use to boil the kettle or to run the lights is on average 40% renewable or thereabouts across the country. I think in 2020, it was actually around 42%. You might correct me if I'm wrong, but because of the way things are accounted for over a number of year period, the official result is 39.1%. But that, you know, the wind blows stronger in some years than others. So that certainly impacts on those figures. And that sounds like something we can build on, certainly. And the other thing I'm struck by when we talk about our renewables targets is that the overall target was 16%, which means that somewhere 84% is still going to be fossil fuel or thereabouts, depending on the accounting. So, you know, it almost doesn't seem like much, and yet we didn't get there. And you and I know how hard, you know, everyone in the sector was working, and it still wasn't enough. And that can be, I think, a little bit deflating, but also, I suppose, point to the need to really get behind this and learn from the fact that that wasn't enough. I'll say a little bit here about the government's response. You know, I think it's been good. And like, my tendency as a human would be to look for some optimism somewhere. And I think it's great to see that the targets that we now have in legislation and you know, the biggest budgets that we have, the Climate Action Plan is recently revised, and it's more comprehensive than ever. And I know there's a lot more people coming into the sector to work on it, and there's room for many, many, many more. And we're certainly at SEAI looking to collaborate with more and more groups of people across society to get everyone engaged and to do this. So, you know, I think that we need to sort of go from there. How do you feel about the level of achievement and what it's going to take to change the game, just in terms of a personal reflection? Do you have any thoughts, having pored over the numbers for the last number of years and seen what it really takes to make a difference?
Yeah, look, I think, you know, looking at the figures, I think, you know, anybody who's been following the figures, you know, over the last decade almost, you know, certainly for the last 4 or 5 years, there's nothing going to be too surprising in what I've just said there on the 2020 numbers. Like, you know, we've kind of been on that pathway. It's been kind of clear for a couple of years now that, you know, we weren't going to quite ramp up enough to meet, you know, any of our major targets. And it just does, I think, for me, highlights just how much inertia there is in the system, just, you know, how much effort you have to put behind it just to get it moving at all in the right direction. And so I think that is a real lesson that, like, you know, there's no kind of quick dials or quick fixes. It's really, you know, a lot of work and a lot of building up has to go in to kind of get any kind of momentum behind the kind of change we need. And we need to, you know, seriously ramp up that momentum. You know, as you mentioned, like, we achieved about 13% renewable energy. So that's still 87% of our energy is from fossil fuel sources in 2020. You know, we need to get that way down in the next 10 years. So, no, to me, it really does speak to just putting in context just the scale of the challenge and the scale of the ramp up and effort that we need over the next. And, you know, we really do have to front load that. It has to be in the next 5 years, the next 3 years, that we just really ramp up, you know, everything we're trying to do to solve this issue.
I think momentum's a really great word, you know, and the inertia that you might talk about being in the system and how closely linked our energy use is to our everyday actions. Just about everything you do from the moment you get up You might turn a light on, you might walk to the bathroom and turn on an electric shower, or you eventually might jump in a car or even on a bus, or you know, or you might choose to go on a bike. And so you can see all of the decisions we make in the course of a day have a link to energy use or not using energy, or fossil fuels being burned or not being burned. And I think that's something that people are becoming more aware of, and certainly something we try to use the numbers, you know, to bear out for people, so people can start to understand their own personal use. Businesses can start to take it a lot more seriously. Certainly huge amount of emissions coming from industry and business that they need to be responsible for. And then at the top level, government doing their bit and putting in these frameworks as best they can. And I think having an open and listening ear as much as possible, so everyone in society who has an idea or an issue around getting off fossil fuels, that they raise those issues and bring those and to the conversation, and we talk about them, and we get a sense of helping each other out on this mission that really needs to be a national mission. We've had a national mission recently in terms of COVID as well, Dennis, and that impacted on the data, and maybe we could talk a little bit about that in terms of what that meant for our energy use and emissions, because I know you've been looking at that, and then consider was there any learnings we can take from that in terms of looking forward in terms of reducing our emissions?
Yeah, so look, as I said, we just recently published our Energy in Ireland report, which looked at the 2020 data and also had a kind of early indications on the 2021 data. And, you know, just as in any area of life, you know, a lot of what happened in the last 2 years has really been dominated by the impacts of the COVID-19 pandemic and on the kind of public health measures that we had to take to try and combat that. So when we look at energy, really the main thing that was impacted there and the main change in the last year and a half in the energy space has been on transport energy because of those restrictions that were put in place because of COVID-19 on personal mobility. So, you know, there was periods of the year there where no one could go beyond 5 kilometers from their house. A lot of restrictions on you know, things like international aviation, things like working from home directives. So a lot of these things impacted a lot on particularly our private car energies and our aviation energies. So if we look at total energy reduced by about 9.6% in the year 2020, and energy-related CO2 emissions reduced by 11.5%. So this is actually like the most significant reduction in CO2 emissions that we've seen really since the height of the economic recession back in 2009. This is a very large reduction, but again, it's down to those temporary restrictions that we saw because of COVID-19 rather than any kind of like longer term sort of sustainable trend. Emissions in transport were down by over 26%. You know, massive reduction there in transport. Again, as I said, aviation, the hardest hit, the emissions there were down by 64%, and private cars were down by about 20%. So that's in the 2020 numbers. We can already see, though, the early indications from the 2021 numbers. So we see there was, you know, another lockdown at the start of 2021 there in January of this year. And again, so that caused a lot of that trend to continue, that reduction in private car use and aviation use. But we can see that from about the middle of the year, from about June and July 2021, that we pretty much have kind of rebounded and returned back to sort of normal pre-pandemic activity on our roads and pre-pandemic sort of levels of consumption of transport fuels. So, you know, it's already back. So that's definitely something to be aware of, that, you know, the reductions that we did see in 2020 are not kind of baked in now for the next 10 years. We're pretty much already back to pre-pandemic levels there.
Yeah, of course, the impact of the pandemic was far from ideal and actually tragic for a lot of people. But we and what we're seeing from the energy side of things is that, you know, we responded, we didn't travel as much. It showed up on the scoreboard in terms of emissions reduction. But as soon as we returned the economy back to some semblance of normality, we're back in our cars and we're back on planes and flying, and the emissions are rebounding. So, it, you know, for me, it just gives me a sense of the level of change that kind of is needed to get those year-on-year changes. And ideally, you wouldn't be doing that all in one sector. And so there wouldn't be the sort of level of disruption we had around the pandemic in order to meet our climate targets, but rather we'd be doing it in a much more constructive way. We'd be balancing the effort across the different sectors of heat, electricity, and transport and continuing our success on electricity, you know, really moving forward with electric vehicles and other options in transport and getting out of cars and cycling and walking and, you know, building out public transport networks and all of those kind of things that we can do there. And then on heat, where we had a big shortfall on our renewables target, but I know we've certainly got some plans, and there'll be a report coming from SEAI early in the new year, which will be called the National Heat Study, which will look at how we might decarbonize, how we can decarbonize heat across the period, ultimately to net zero emissions by 2050, which is, of course, the national ambition that's now baked into legislation. So, I think there's definitely some learnings from the pandemic, and probably more to be had in terms of, you know, how we might get savings in a hurry, but obviously a need to do that and balance that with the impact on our daily lives. But, you know, if we don't win on this challenge, the consequences you talked about really off the top of the conversation here are the ones that ultimately we're trying to avoid. So we might be at times looking at the lesser of two evils options. Will we delve in on heat a little bit, Dennis? I just think that's one area where we might get a bit more of an idea from you on the statistics and what had us falling so short, and maybe we can talk a little bit then about the options on heat emissions.
Yeah, so like transport was the area, I suppose, that saw the big reduction in use. But then as a corollary to that, I suppose more people were you know, at their homes over 2020 because of all the work from home directives and the school closures and stuff. So we did see a slight uptick actually in heat energy use and heat emissions. And a lot of that was focused on the household sector. So we saw in particular an increase in the amount of oil used in homes in the year 2020. Yeah, emissions from heating increased by about 3%. And emissions from heating and home increased by about 10% in 2020. And then emissions from kind of industry and business were down ever so slightly. Yeah, and I think it does kind of speak to what you said there, Jim, that like, you know, the need for all sectors to kind of to move together on this, that like, because we did see this, you know, really big impacts on transport, like down by, you know, almost 20%. And yet, when we look at like across the whole energy system, the emissions reduction that we saw in energy in 2020, you know, in spite of these massive disruptions to our daily lives, was still less than the average emissions reduction we're going to have to achieve every single year between 2021 and 2030. And, you know, because I think it just speaks to that we've had this big impact in one sector, but that, you know, that on its own, it's not enough. We really need all sectors to be moving in the right direction every year. You know, it's just, there's so little wiggle room. There's just really no room for backsliding in any area now. We has to be full steam ahead in all sectors every year if we're going to keep in any way on track for our 2030 targets.
Yeah, really get that. And also conscious that with some countries that we can look to for examples, we know that other countries, for example, on the renewable heat, are a little bit ahead of us. Some are a long way ahead of us, and so we're looking to what technologies they've got. We're looking at what might be suitable here in Ireland, and what needs to go in now, and how we need to continue the success of our electricity and making that more and more renewable. There's really strong targets to make that 80% renewable by 2030, which means when we shift our heat energy use to electricity, and we use electricity for heating, and we use electricity for transport in electric vehicles, for example, that it's leaning on that backbone or that pillar of that really decarbonized electricity. So we're going to see offshore wind becoming very important, solar PV being very important, things like district heating, which people may not have heard much about, becoming very important. So do look up the term district heating and get to know what that is, and that'll be an important solution for our heating systems. Electric heat pumps, SEAI currently has grants to support homeowners to get heat pumps installed in their home, and that's a replacement technology for fossil gas and oil boilers, so a chance to get off fossil fuels, and obviously all of the energy efficiency that we feel is also so important, at least to get your house ready to get away from the fossils as soon as you can. So there's lots of stuff people can do. And the other thing that strikes me as you're talking is it's not just down, you know, we all have to do our bit as citizens and as householders, and, you know, some are going to be able to afford to do something to their house, some might be able to do some behavioral measures, and I guess everyone can get involved in conversations and start to help each other out, but we really need that whole of societal movement. So we're going to need all of industrial CEOs really to take this on at the board level. You know, if they want to be credible and maintain customers, they're going to have to do something about their fossil fuel use, in my mind. Same with businesses. You know, I think people are going to start to vote, and I with vote with their feet in terms of, you know, who they buy from and those kind of things. And I was really struck by the EPA's recent publication on climate change in the Irish mind, which really says, look, the Irish citizen is very engaged and very aware of climate. They believe it's a problem that we have to tackle. They believe government should do as much as they can, and they want to act. And I just think everyone should have a look at that study, because it really has you're saying to me that as a society, we're really ready to tackle this. We just really want to know how to do it. So I think a lot of the work that you do, Dennis, in terms of the stats and all of us looking forward on these pathways of how can we get away from fossil fuels, how can we end that addiction, and how can we do that together as a national effort is going to be really important. And I think, you know, we want to spend a little bit of time being shocked and appalled at how we didn't make the targets, but really get positive about this now and sort of think about how we can come together as a country and get it done. So, you know, there's a huge prize available as well. I mean, we've been studying that at SEAI for some time now. We know there are a lot of jobs in doing this. There's a lot of enterprise, so there'll be a lot of new companies start up and find niches in the solutions that we're going to need. They'll be able to export those internationally. And ultimately, if we shift to a very renewable heavy system and we get away from the imported fossil fuels that we've been using for a number of years, and I think the number's about 6 billion euro of spend that leaves the country in terms of buying in oil, gas, and other fossil fuels into the country, and we replace that with a renewable Irish sourced energy system, we'll get more control over our energy system and prices, and we'll have something that's more secure for future generations, and obviously cleaner, and we'll be able to share those, you know, share how we did that with the international community, and hopefully make a difference internationally. So there's a lot to play for, as you set up right from the start, Dennis. We have a lot of great data in SEAI to lean on. Any closing remarks from you before we wrap up the conversation?
Jamie, yeah, look, I think you're right that recent EPA study was just really one of the most kind of heartening things that we've seen in this kind of space in a long time. And it's just really so important, actually. And I think it's you know, one of the kind of relatively simple things, but it's also kind of a difficult thing, I think, that everybody can do to kind of put their weight behind this transition. And that's it's to be a supporter for the transition, you know, to support energy projects in your area, to support renewable energy projects in your area, to support public transport or cycling projects in your area, to support community initiatives that are in your area, just to be a real champion for this, you know, when it comes to your community, when you have the opportunity to speak up or to be a supporter for this, that you recognize that the real, you know, the overall goal of why we're trying to do this and why it may be necessary for us to, you know, make changes to ways we've done things for a long time and to the way things that we're comfortable, but just to recognize that, you know, the reason why we need to do this and why we need to make these changes and as I say, just to support it and to encourage other people along the journey as well. I think, you know, it's going to be a long road over the next 10 years and we really need people to buy into this and to be enthusiastic and just to keep the kind of, you know, prize in mind of what we're trying to do here, which is really just to try and avoid some, you know, pretty potentially terrible outcomes that we could see in the next two decades, you know, that our children might be the ones that have to face up to, and just to really keep that in mind and yeah, just get behind the kind of, you know, the hard work that we're going to have to do in the next 10 years.
Yeah, I really got that, Dennis. Thanks very much. Really, really got the sense of a fight for survival there underlying that, and you know, that's no lie. That's what it is. And I want to thank you for bringing the data and the, you know, the really the foundation on which we can build, so we know what to do and where these emissions are coming from. Really appreciate that, and asking everyone who is interested to come to the SEAI website, take a look at our data, take a look at all the opportunities to act, be you a household or a business, you want to join a community, if you can afford to do up your house or buy an EV, great. If you can't, just come anyway and join a conversation and get involved, and as Dennis used the word there, support, and you know, I think if we support each other, we'll get this done. Thanks for joining us, thanks for your time today, and we look forward to working with all of the listeners and more in 2022.
A big thanks to Jim and Dennis for such an interesting discussion about the report's findings. If you're interested, you can read the report in full on our website, seai.ie. Until next time. Thank you for listening to today's episode. If you've enjoyed it, then please like, share and subscribe to our podcast. You'll find previous episodes on our website, seai.ie/podcast. Along with information about our grants and supports. Until next time.